Rich, you ready? The meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education will now come to order. Time, Mr. McManus, please.
7:03 p.m.
Thank you, sir. In accordance with the provisions of the New Jersey Open Public Meetings Act, Chapter 231, laws of 1975, adequate notice of this meeting was provided through public notice on November 14, 2017. Faxed into three newspapers designated by the board, the Hunterdon County Democrat, the Hunterdon Review, and Express Times. Also posting on the district website, the main bulletin board in the administration offices, and in each Clinton Township school. And finally, faxing to the clerk of Clinton Township. Mr. McManus, may we please have a roll call, sir?
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Here.
Mrs. DeMurley.
Here.
Dr. Foy. Mrs. McHugh.
Here.
Mr. Malloy. Mrs. Olasky. Mrs. Redaguda. Mrs. Vanderoff.
Here.
Ms. Grant.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Yep. I'd like to take a moment and introduce Perna Shankar. She will say the Pledge of Allegiance for us to open the meeting this evening. Perna?
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. At this time, I would like to introduce to the Camerata Singers. Camerata is a group of 7th and 8th grade students made up of all students who volunteer to be a part of this group. They'll be singing the Star Spangled Banner for us this evening. We'd like to thank Dr. Feyender, Ms. Hammond, and Ms. Cohn for the invitation to come perform for you tonight. So without further ado, this is the Camerata Singers singing our Star Spangled Banner.
And bright stars through the pale.
request for a second song.
I don't know. Why can't we
have
enough?
Have them back on stage.
Yes. I mean, they're here. It's just one. I'm like, why am I? Sorry, parents.
Sneak preview of our winter concert. Our winter concert will be featuring music of 7 different languages. This particular piece is titled Cantate Domino, sung in Latin. If you're interested in hearing more, the concert is December 5th. We'll be here at 7 p.m. starting. December 5th, the chorus concert, and then the following week, our very talented instrumental program as well, led by Mr. Stephen Schaefer. That's on December 12th, also at 7 p.m. Thank you very much.
Board meeting of the Clinton Township School District. Today is Monday, November 20th, 2017. Before I go any further, I'd like to ask Mrs. McLaughlin if she would be the process guardian for this evening's meeting. Ms. McLaughlin?
Sure.
Thank you. As usual, we have a very busy agenda this evening. First on the agenda is a segment that will be conducted between the Board of Education and Ms. Gwen Thornton, our NJSBA representative. During this portion of the meeting, Ms. Thornton will help the Board of Education establish its annual board goals. Board goals established tonight will help the board to provide an appropriate level of oversight for the district over the course of the next year. She will also conduct the annual code of ethics training required under New Jersey law. Each of these items mentioned below above are once again required by law. So I'd like to introduce Ms. Thornton to the public and to the Board of Education. As I mentioned before, she is our field representative from the New Jersey School Boards Association. She currently provides direct field service support to New Jersey school boards located in Hunterdon County, Middlesex, Somerset, and Union counties. Do I have that correct? She comes to us with an impressive background and years of experience and knowledge in education, experience with school boards, governance, district policy, and the list goes on. Ms. Thornton has served on boards of education in Burlington, Camden, and Gloucester counties. Prior to joining New Jersey School Boards Association, Ms. Thornton was the president of the Bridgewater-Raritan Regional School District's Board of Education. She is also a former high school social studies teacher. So without further ado, Ms. Thornton, welcome.
Thank you very much. I'll try to live up to all of that. I'm not sure that I can, but I'll give it a shot.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Would you prefer that I invite the...
Yes, please. Thank you.
No problem whatsoever.
So, good evening. It's indeed a pleasure to be here this evening. And I thought we would begin just by reviewing the Code of Ethics. I know that most of you are, I think all of you, have been through this training before. And so there's nothing really too terribly new or astonishing for all of you, but I do think that it does bear some discussion. I would point out to the public that school board members are the largest group of unpaid public officials who at one time voluntarily, it is now in statute, a requirement, agreed to live by a code of ethics. I am waiting for our brethren down the street from our offices in under the Golden Dome, perhaps, to agree to a code of ethics, but I'm not holding my breath after 25 years of working as a school board association rep and as a board member. So it's something that I was always very proud of, to be a board member, that there is a code of ethics. And so the first portion, and you can see on the top sheet, is really that you agree that you will indeed uphold all state, federal, and local regulations and statutes in administrative code, that you will make all of your decisions in the best interest of all children within the school district, and that that is your responsibility to make sure that you are providing a safe educational, safe and secure educational opportunities and environment for all students, that you will confine your board service to policymaking, oversight, and appraisal. Your responsibility is to see that the district is well run. It is indeed not your responsibility on a day-to-day basis to administer the district. You have educational leaders and experts whose responsibility it is to do that. You will recognize that authority rests with the full Board of Education. Other than when you are seated at a duly advertised meeting of the board, such as this evening, you have no authority within your community other than the actions that you take here this evening and at any recognized meeting of the Board of Education. So you need to remember that as well. You will refuse to surrender your independent judgment to any particular interest group. Again, you represent all students and their best interests, and you need to make sure that the decisions you make are on behalf of all of those students in Clinton Township. Maintaining confidentiality of those items that are lawfully allowed to be discussed in closed session that protect both your students and your staff is clearly an integral part of board member service. Sometimes that can be challenging, but it is essential for you all to remember that you must hold to yourselves anything that in any way could lead to possible compromising situations for the district or other kinds of liability issues. You will vote to appoint the best personnel available to the district and make sure that your decisions are based on the qualifications and recognition of the role of the superintendent to recommend. Boards of Education are not permitted by law to hire anyone without an affirmative recommendation of the superintendent, and so it's critically important that you remember to do that. Holding school personnel and protecting them in the proper performance of their duties is another responsibility that you have. That means all personnel, all the time, whether you're sitting at a board meeting or you're at the ShopRite or Costco or wherever you are on the sidelines of a soccer game, your responsibility is to ensure that you protect your school personnel. And referring all complaints to the chief administrative officer, which is your superintendent, that is an obligation that all of you have. I know that you all reside in your community, you know lots of folks here, and very often people will come to board members with concerns and issues. And I know because you are good people and you are volunteers, the automatic reaction is to want to help solve their problems, but what you need to do is to provide them access to the people who can solve their issues. So the best thing that you can do as a board member is to provide them the information to enable them to access those folks within the system who can indeed solve their problems. You are not the how people, you are the what folks. So you need to make sure that you refer people up the chain of command, and ultimately that you refer any complaints to the chief administrative officer, to your superintendent. Again, your role is to see the district as well run, not to run the district on a day-to-day basis, including solving problems for your public. That doesn't mean you can't help them by giving them the information they need to have to be able to access the system. So if they have a transportation issue, you need to direct them to the transportation office and the appropriate folks there. If they have a concern with the teacher, you need to have them meet with the teacher and tell them what the steps are in that process. So that's a very important component. I know sometimes it's difficult, but it's very important to do that. So I think that really is a very brief summary. I didn't want to take a lot of your time, but keep in mind, you know, that there are some fundamental and enduring truths about the way we know from research and over time that boards operate, and that those are tried and true. You need to make sure that you turn to your policy manual for your decision making. So, for example, you speak with one voice through the board president. No one else should be speaking on behalf of the board. No one else is authorized to speak on behalf of the board. So as you're going about your day, especially if you have new folks that come on board, sometimes the press reaches out to them in an effort to get comments. You just need to know, again, that the board needs to speak with one voice through its majority decisions. So that's pretty much the code of ethics. I've included an acknowledgement of receipt of the code. One of the things you're required to do is to sign that, date it, and get it back to your business administrator. It gets filed with the county office. Excuse me, I'm sorry, it is cold season and I am still suffering here, long after workshop with this. Questions that you may have on the code of ethics. The last sheet is, I just wanted to point out, in the last couple of years, we've had a lot of changes around who may participate and who has conflicts. There was a recent decision in October that made, once again, another change. And so we have tried to outline those changes for you in this handy-dandy little chart. But again, if you have specific questions regarding the potential of a conflict in terms of participating, either in setting terms and conditions of your superintendent's contract, for example, or for bargaining with your various units within the school district, you should check with your board attorney, who is always the final arbiter. But they have changed this multiple times. We used to be able to recite it chapter and verse. Then they switched it through some advisory decisions, and they just issued another decision, essentially going back to the old days. I can't tell you why, but they have. And that's the School Ethics Commission. It's not the Securities Exchange Commission, which is what I thought when I started being a board member in New Jersey. But it's the School Ethics Commission. So essentially what it says is, if you have a family member who is a member of another statewide union and works in another school district, once you have a memorandum of agreement, they are now, once again, allowed to vote if the memorandum of agreement includes all salary guides and cost it out, so that they can do that. For a while they couldn't, but now they can again. So they're back in. They were out, now they're back in. And so that's what this chart denotes for you, so just hang on to it. But again, if you have any questions regarding potential conflicts, you need to seek counsel from your board attorney, who's the best arbiter of those decisions. Okay? Yes?
Ms. Thornton, can you just go over chain of command again, please?
Yes. The chain of command simply says that board members will themselves, as well as recommend to stakeholders in the community, where to go to have their problems addressed. You always start at the lowest level. So if you have a parent that comes to you and they have a concern about their child's classroom instruction or something that happened in the class, you need to direct them to their teacher first. If they're not satisfied with the resolution at that level, then in a elementary school, the next level would be either an assistant principal, if you have them, or the principal. and if they were still not satisfied with the resolution in discussing it with the principal, they could then bring it to either your assistant superintendent or your director of curriculum and instruction, and then ultimately to your superintendent. One of the pieces that you can share with your public is if you were to involve yourself at a level at the beginning, and it were to get to the board, because sometimes there are issues that ultimately make their way to the board. If you had involved yourself way back in the beginning, you would have to recuse yourself and not participate in any discussion because it would be a conflict, okay? So the chain of command is pretty simple. It just lays out that you start at the lowest level, closest to the issue or the discussion or the problem or the challenge, and you work your way up through the chain of command such that, again, all of those issues get referred ultimately to your chief school administrator, okay? No matter what it is. So if it was a financial question, you might refer them to the business administrator who would be able to answer them if they had a question on the budget or an item such as that. The transportation would run through your, busing would run through your transportation office. Your athletic coordinator or would be the person for a co-curricular program, speaking to the coach first and then to the athletic coordinator or director, and then up the chain of command that way. So you're going to start at the level closest to where the issue arises and work your way to the top.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions for Ms. Thornton relative to ethics this evening from the board?
Can you pass that down?
Seeing none, can we then move on to goal setting, please?
We can.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So as most of you know, on an annual basis, we recommend strongly that you set district goals, which become the basis for the evaluation of your chief school administrator. In a school district, everyone has goals. The goals from the district drive the goals of the buildings, of the principals and other administrators, which then drive the goals of teachers. We also recommend that boards annually look at their processes and procedures and identify what they believe to be the most significant challenges they face in terms of how they operate and how they can be more effective in their governance and oversight responsibilities. And so we recommend strongly that you adopt on a regular basis a couple of board goals that become the focus of your work in terms of your professional development. All staff engage in professional development, and we believe strongly that boards of education should also engage in professional development, looking at what they do and how they can do it better. And so what I would recommend is that you think in terms of your operation of the past year and decide what you think would be the most effective use of your time to help you be more effective. So I would ask you, and we recommend that you not really have more than three or four goals in a year. The same with your chief school administrator. You want to make sure that your focus is concentrated enough to enable you to accomplish those goals and not be so diffuse as to be, running around in 15 different directions and not accomplishing those kinds of things. And so it's around identification. For most boards of education, obviously, their sort of evergreen goal that they always have is to continue to monitor student achievement, because that really is why you are here, to ensure that you are providing the greatest number of educational and co-curricular opportunities that will allow each child to reach his or her potential. And so we recommend that you, just like the district, have at least one academically focused goal. And since your responsibility is oversight, it's about monitoring the progress of the district. So does that work for all of you? I mean, that's a pretty standard. Other issues that you believe you need to perhaps address. And I'll get this all back to you in a memo that you can read. I recognize that my chicken scratch is a little tough to read.
Your chicken scratch is a lot better than mine.
I'll get it back to you in the form of a memo so you have it memorialized. Mm-hmm. But additionally, I know one of the concerns, and it may not be here, but as I work my way through Hunterdon County over the years, and especially the last couple of years, one of the issues that I'm seeing boards having to address, and it might be a concern here, I would think that it may be, is to determine how to make maximum utilization of your available space in a fiscally responsible way to account for declining enrollments. I don't think there's a district in Hunterdon County at this point in time that is not experiencing a decline in enrollment. So I think one of the focus has been, and I know Maria, you've been to a couple of the meetings up at the high school. We've been working with the entire cluster of districts at North Hunterdon Voorhees in terms of looking at what are some of the ways the districts can work together, perhaps, if applicable, not necessarily, but it just depends, at looking at how we can share services, share spaces, just to examine all of that, because everyone is really trying to find ways to accommodate the declining enrollments in a way that is responsible to their communities and still provides the highest quality educational, education to all students. So that may be something, I mean, you have to tell me, but just in thinking ahead with, around Hunterdon, that seems to be a real area of focus for my boards.
That's been an area of focus for us for the last couple of years, looking at our enrollment and the decline in that enrollment and assessing our buildings. And we're in the middle right now doing a cost study of what that might look like if you consolidate or not consolidate and then use a different available open space. So I would agree with Gwen that's something we probably should continue to do over the next year. Oh, yeah. Is everybody okay with that one? Yeah.
So are you interested in coming to a conclusion around that, or do you just want to write it in a way that says we will continue to review and study, or we will make a final, I hate to use the word final, but we'll make some recommendations for moving forward? You tell me how, because I don't know where you are in that process.
We're evaluating.
I'm sorry?
Evaluating, really, the space.
Continue to evaluate.
You certainly can wordsmith this to make it I have written to evaluate the best resolution in a fiscally responsible manner, the means to address declining enrollment, and then you can work through it however you want, and it doesn't give you an absolute end to the timeline. So if it takes beyond a particular period of time, that gives you sufficient time, because obviously that's a critically important piece.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
You're welcome. Anything else that you think would be worthy of your attention at doing some additional professional development? Rachel?
I think we need to continue to include all stakeholders in communication. And I would actually like to see an increase in participation, particularly at board meetings. Like, it was great that all the parents came to listen to the singers, but then I looked up and everybody was almost gone, except for the few people that stayed. So figuring out ways to increase participation and at the same time continuing to involve all the stakeholders.
So to continue to engage parents and community members and expanding communication and attendance at district functions?
I think all stakeholders, like teachers are here too. I think the entire school community.
Be more of an overarching goal, but I know several years ago we put out core values, so it's really just continue to operate under those core values, maybe reiterate them for any new members in January, and just continue to abide by those.
Call them core values? So to continue to support and operate under our core values. That gives you four pretty meaty goals that should work. Anything else?
Nope.
I will get this back to you.
Great. It's pretty straightforward, right?
I know.
Thank you.
So, and your kids were absolutely awesome.
Thank you.
At workshops, it's every year. Mm-hmm. We have student performances. Please sign them up.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Happy holidays to all of you.
Thank you. Take care. Thanks. I'm going to move around a little bit in the agenda this evening. I'm going to move on to the report of the superintendent of schools, and then we'll come back to board president comments. So Dr. Fyander, I'd like to turn it over to you at this point in time, please.
Hey, and I'll reverse the order of my presentation and ask that Joanne Hinkle approach the bench.
Well, on mine it's white, and on this one it's an interesting hue of purple.
Oh, okay. Here we go.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Joanne Hinkle. I'm the supervisor for instruction assessment and data. And I just wanted to take a little time this evening to go over our PARP results from the last administration. So basically, some general information is that the 2016-2017 spring administration was the third administration of the PARC assessments, the Partnership for the Assessment of Readiness for College and Careers. And it was now the second opportunity to compare year-to-year results. Our district students took the PARC in English Language Arts and Math in grades 3-8. At the middle school, we had students participate in math assessments in grades 3-8 and end-of-course assessments in Algebra 1 and Geometry. Right now, there are 8 states in the District of Columbia participating in the PARC testing. 2 of those states do a hybrid exam, and that would be Massachusetts and Louisiana. Right now, the spring dates for the next administration of PARC have already been set, and that would begin with the window opening on April 16th and closing on May 25th. So just to review the performance levels, New Jersey only considers a level 4 and 5 to be passing, while the majority of the other states consider a level 3, 4, or 5 to be passing. And those levels are defined as not yet meeting grade level, partially meeting grade level, approaching grade level, then meeting the grade level, and exceeding the grade level for 4 and 5. This is a graph representing the last 3 years and the state of New Jersey. And basically, the first year we did the light blue color, the second year of PARC is the purple, and this year for our district is the darker blue. The red indicates the scores on average across the state of New Jersey. So this takes us through 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th. And basically, you'll see a little bit of movement there, accounting for the fact that the test has gone through a few adjustments and alterations over the course of its third administration, and that there are between 7 and 10 forms of the PARC test that are around, and that it varies which form you get by district, and certainly by which state you're in. These are the math proficiency levels by year. Again, 3rd through 8th, taking the grade level assessment. And then we had a large group of kids, probably about 80, who participated in the Algebra 1 assessment. And we had a much smaller group, about 4, who actually took the geometry end of course assessment this year. This is just a different way of looking at the graph. Some people like this one, some not so much. Basically, what it shows us is where the entire grade band fell in terms of their proficiency level. So the red and the pink colors would be our level 4 and 5 students, and the blue would mark that level 3, which would not be considered proficient in our state. And this is the same graph for math expectations. This is a cross-section of the first 3 grade levels. These are evidence statements analysis. This is actually the most actionable piece of data that PARC provides us with. And what we see here is basically it looks like a dot graph, but it is along the bottom the standards that are assessed in each of these grades. And it shows what the PARC states did, what the state of New Jersey did in blue, and the green dots represent where the Clinton Township School District fell in the assessment. So up on the top left-hand side, that would be the 3rd grade ELA assessment, the 4th grade up on the top right-hand, and then our 5th grade on the bottom. I just randomly chose the first 3 grades to show you a progression of how those skills are banding out across them. What's interesting about this is that when you look at 3, 4, and 5, this is a place where, as a district, we've begun an initiative on using the Readers and Writers Workshop, the Teachers College model for instruction. And We have our K through three. This is their first full year of implementing the change in strategies and unit structure. Fourth grade will have had another year of that, and fifth grade, this will be the second year that they've been operating under that reading writing workshop model. The standards are aligned at the bottom so that you can see if you have a green dot that falls below any of the lines, you can see what standard that's referring to, what was assessed. The valuable piece there is that we look at those to identify why were those particular standards not successfully met. And sometimes that can be simply the chronology of how things were instructed. And you'll see that example actually a little bit more in math. Math is a same structure to the graph, but a longer, larger set of standards. What we determined about a year or so ago was in the second year of PARC, PARC released what they called the PARC Content Model Frameworks. And the test, the assessment is aligned to the standards, and that's what our instruction is also aligned to. And so what we found were there were some of the areas that were popping for us that were unique. Why weren't standards being met in certain areas? And when we looked at the frameworks, we were able to determine that the math series that we were using didn't instruct them in an order that allowed us to adequately move through and master certain skills by the time the end of the year came. An example would be in fourth grade, we had in the second year noticed a gap in data analysis, and we found that that was actually a skill set that was taught at the end of the school year, and therefore when the assessments were occurring a little bit earlier in the year, they actually hadn't gotten to instruction at that point. So we can see logical gaps like that, but then what we also see is sometimes a lack of a cohesive design and instruction. For example, in fifth grade we noted that decimals were taught prior to fractions being taught. So what we did was we reordered the units of instruction, which made for a much more cohesive instructional design, and it actually led to an increase in our efficacy for our math skills. So, the evidence statements that we use, which we distribute to all of the administrators and the grade levels, they are linked to the standards. And again, just to summarize, we did rework the scope and sequence of units in math as a response to that. And this year, what we've been looking at is addressing how our assessments themselves are structured. Are they rigorous enough? And so on. The focus on math fact automaticity is another area that needs to be addressed. And just taking a look at the frameworks again to make sure that we're using effective methods for instruction. In ELA, we're going to continue to use our Readers and Writers Workshop model and continue training for our K through 3 grades. Fourth and fifth grades have been trained now. This will be their fourth year. And so their units are fully developed and well implemented. And our sixth through eighth grade teams have just begun meeting with our trainer because they don't follow a workshop model in terms of scheduling, which is a 2-hour block. They follow a middle school model, which allows an hour of teaching by that subject. And so what we are using there is an investigation of what are the strategies that would be used in best practices for those English language arts classes. We also use one trainer in the district so that we have continuity of the message across K to 8. So our next steps are to continue taking a look at the evidence statement analysis. The state has told us for a couple of years now they're coming out with a super report. So far we haven't seen a super report, but we're waiting. That one, actually, there's so much data that's built into PARC with evidence statement analysis that what they're trying to do is create a report that you can take a look at a student or a class and the assessments will actually be live, where you can link right to what the standards are, what the structure of the question was, what its point value was, and then examples that could be used for instruction in class. We'll also be looking at instructional strategies such as cooperative learning and problem-based learning. This will be the second year that we've had training in the district on problem-based learning through IDE Corporation. The first year we trained 20 teachers who volunteered for the training, and this year we trained an additional 20 teachers. Problem-based learning is authentic instruction, where a task is developed based on the standards, and the students work to solve a real-world task, so they're applying their learning as well. We'll be taking a look at some more performance-based assessment strategies and enriching, really, our formative and summative assessment libraries. And in articulation, what we have begun last year, which was very beneficial, especially in the math strands, was horizontal and vertical articulation. So not only meeting with a common grade level, but also with the grade levels above and below you. So you have a good conversation about what you're seeing in third grade versus fourth grade, what the expectations are. In our district, we change buildings frequently, so the expectations tend to change. But it's important for third graders at Patrick McGarren and fourth grade teachers at Round Valley to have a conversation about what's happening in each building so that they're teaching in a straightforward and cohesive manner to make one transition to another building successful. Right now, we have a new governor, and he'll be taking office in January, and he has stated that he will not be continuing with PARC assessments. However, the state's contract with PARC is 4 years in duration, and this in 2017-2018 will be the fourth year of that contract. So while we have a date for PARC administration, at this point, until we get some clear direction from the new administration in the State House, we won't know exactly what that's going to look like. We do know that the New Jersey ASK test, the science assessment, has changed. It was paper format for a long time in grades 4 through 8. We don't know the format. We're anticipating it will be electronically delivered, and this year it will be delivered in grades 5 and 8. The logic behind that move, supposedly being that they are testing the fourth grade last year. They have data and a controlled kind of group so that they can do comparative analysis with the fifth grade scores that they would get from a new assessment this year. When we know what that's going to look like, we'll certainly let everybody know. But we'll post all the information and the presentation from tonight on our website. Questions? Yes? We have all of the scattergrams. Sure, we could make another set of slides for that. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yes? Yeah, there are areas where you could certainly track student performance, especially in the area of writing, because certain grades will follow using a literary analysis, a research-based response. So you could certainly follow that piece of it to view how writing is progressing over the levels. They're going to change as we go through the years, so they won't remain consistent. Probably in math, it would be easier to identify mastery of standards by class than to do it a different way. So what we've basically done is we've been taking a look at what we use in Renaissance, which is our 3 times a year benchmark testing, and we've been examining how closely they're correlating to the PARC testing results to see they give us an indicator whether we're on track for instruction. And so far, the correlation has been pretty spot on. So that's been the first step for student-by-student analysis. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
So in the line of graphs, those are mean values for the state and district?
Yes.
Or median values?
So those are mean values? Standard, you mean?
Yeah. I'm given standard. You've got 3 dots. Is anybody being able to look at those say that while being on top of each other, are they considered the same?
So are they considered the same by
statistical should you be reworking the order just so that we don't differ from the state needs? Like, decimals and fractions, that's something you might want to go close to one or the other. Do the teachers say, yes, we're not putting some good here, but we don't think the order of standards is the right order, so we should be teaching what we want?
So we don't change anything in the order without meeting with the teachers and going through that process. But the design of all packaged curricula, so Go Math is a series we use, Math Expressions, Mathland, they're all designed for certain specifications. So they're designed to be 140 days of instructional length, and they're designed with large and small units. The large units are meant to stay in place and to be prepared, you know, and followed chronologically as they're delivered. The smaller units are allowed to move and be rearranged at will. They don't require prerequisite skills in other areas before they can be taught. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I was saying, when the teacher says, we can stop working on ourselves, and they say, yes, the state's current standards are a certain order, but we will look better if we kind of reorder things. Maybe the teachers are doing this in a group, sometimes we don't want to reorder this.
Well, our fourth grade actually did stay with their order, and our fifth grade did change because it made sense when we met and reviewed the information that something should be changed. So we make as an informed decision on that when we're going to look at those. It's a 6-week window for the assessment. It's a long window.
Like, if that's a question, does anybody take a look at those intra-standard analysis and say, yes or no, they're different from the state?
So rather than really focusing on where we stood with the state and the park states, what we've used the evidence statement analysis for is to look at the standards that they're talking about and to take a look. So those reports link to evidence statements from the assessments. So basically you look at a standard, you see that you didn't perform well on a standard, you can go back to the park website where they have a lot of resources and you can pull up the evidence statements that were used. And that way you can tell from your instruction what it is you need to enrich, what you need to remediate, or things that you did very well. So it's really linked more to what was practical on the test for those particular items. Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thank you very much, Joanne. Appreciate it. Continuing on my report, the enrollment report, there are 1,263 students. We saw 39 of them tonight, and they were outstanding. Under suspension reports, there was a 1 day in school at the middle school, a half day in school at the middle school, 3 days out of school, 5 days out of school at the middle school, and 2 days out of school suspension at Round Valley School. I want to skip to the presentation of the CUSAC district self-assessment. It's two parts this year. The one is the overarching report of curriculum instruction, finance facilities, policies, etc. And you are to score based on documentation, either a one or not applicable, and that gives you a percentage point, or a no, and then you get less percentage points. And last year, the district did not score 100% in all categories, and Dr. Villani worked very hard to get those things in compliance. So I'm very happy to say that Mrs. Grant and I signed off on 100% in all of those overarching categories. So some really hard work was done to bring us up to speed. There's a second part. We're part of a district performance review, another acronym, DPR, and we have to file additional documentation to show just the backup for that. So we have additional time to do that. So we're just asking that you accept that we have scored 100% on all the categories in the overarching. And then in a monthly report, I would like to say that in Clinton Township, it really is the season of gratitude. Round Valley School has held the Souls for Souls shoe drive, and they exceeded their goals, and the students and their teachers are going to come at the next board meeting and present to you all the shoes. Well, they're not going to give you the shoes, but they're going to show you the picture. So we're really excited about that. The kids were really, really excited, and all the schools participated. This year, for the 30th year, the students in the district are participating in giving gifts to over 100 kindergarten and first graders in Camden who are underserved and less fortunate. I believe it's Barbara Marinelli who is spearheading this. And for example, 7th and 8th graders will be getting socks for kindergartners, 8th graders are getting toothbrushes. And again, it's just amazing the sense of service and caring about others. We want to announce the return of Purple Rain. I am excited about this. The band's battling cancer. It's both student and teacher bands that will be doing classic and modern rock on January 5th, and it's a fundraiser. And finally, I'd like to end this part of the report with congratulations. Lizanne Bartram, is it Lisa Ann or Lizanne earned the Cooperating Teacher Excellence Award from Rider University. She was acknowledged for her dedication to a student teacher, and the nomination said, from day one, she was patient, understanding, and always had insightful answers to my many, many questions. She always went above and beyond, making sure I was giving every opportunity to learn and experience as much as possible. In fact, I continue to contact her even after my time in her classroom ended, and she's nothing but supportive and encouraging. So we want to congratulate her on that great award. And speaking of congratulations, there's something in the water. We have two new baby boys who've arrived. Nolan Robert Bradford on November 15th, 8 pound, 8 ounces and 21 inches. Wow. And Thaddeus Fox Bendorf, thank you, arrived on November 18th, 7 pounds, 7 ounces and is 20 inches. And we congratulate the moms who work in our district. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm looking for a motion, please, for 18SU-013 to 18-SU-016. Or, motion. Sorry, 13.
Sorry, got it.
Let's go. Just check. So I'm going to do that again. I'm looking for a motion, please, for 18-SU-013.
Motion.
Remember, I said her handwriting was better than mine. And 18-SU-016.
Second.
Who had the motion?
Motion.
Motion. Second, Ms. McLaughlin.
No, she had the motion.
Yeah, okay. Any questions for Dr. Piander this evening? No, seeing none. May we have a roll call, please?
Mrs. DeMurley.
Yes.
Dr. Foy.
Yes.
Mrs. McHugh.
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Yes.
Mr. Malloy.
Abstain.
Mrs. Van der Roth?
Yes.
And Ms. Grant?
Yes.
Motion passed.
Thank you. I would just like to continue with President's comments for a minute and congratulate Dr. Piander and her staff for achieving excellence in CUSAC. That's on behalf of the board.
I think they did
thank
it before
you.
Me, but no. Thank you.
But thank you very much. I'd like to move on to the public comments section on agenda items only. To guarantee the fair and orderly expression of an individual, our bylaw 9322 limits comments to 3 minutes. We will adhere to this bylaw to allow for everyone to be heard in a fair, consistent, and equitable way. Also, the public comment section is for comments made by the public. It is not an interactive session between the board and the public. This too is defined by our bylaw. The board will make note of any questions or comments that member of the public will make at the microphone. If the Board of Education has an immediate answer to a question or questions, they'll be answered at the conclusion of the public comments section. To the extent of to the extent any other action or research is warranted, it will be addressed by the board president or the superintendent of schools as appropriate. No participant may speak more than once on the same topic until all others who wish to speak on that topic have been heard. If you would like to address the board this evening, please approach the microphone, state your name and address. Be limiting this public comment section to 30 minutes. Now, seeing none, I'd like to then move on to the first recognition of the public. This section will be for comments made by the public on school-related matters only. And all the parameters that I just mentioned for the public comments section on agenda items only will apply here. If you'd like to address the board, please approach the microphone, state your name and address. We'll be limiting this public comment section to 15 minutes.
Alison Ford, 7 Oak Ridge Road. As you're all very aware, there were recent elections for board members, and there were various things on social network groups saying that the PTA should be held responsible to do a host the candidate evening. And bearing in mind something that Rachel actually said just earlier about getting higher attendance here, I think it'd actually be more apt if the board had actually had a open session where there was a meet the candidates prior to the recent elections. A lot of people, not just with children in the district, but who lived in the district, wanted to meet the various candidates and to get a better understanding before they voted. It would have been a great opportunity to get lots more people in here and to see what the board actually has to, what the board does.
Anyone else like to address the board? Mrs. Ford, I thank you for your comments. Unfortunately, by law and statute, the board cannot hold such a forum. We're not permitted to do so, so that's why that was not conducted by the Board of Education. Anyone else? Okay, seeing none, we're going to move on to the report of the business administrator, Mr. McManus.
Yes, a reminder to the board that the next scheduled board meeting is December 18th, 2017. The remaining motions under the business administrator are all common and routine motions, essentially that the books are in line and approving up through October 31st. That's it.
Thank you very much. I'm looking for a motion, please, for 18BA-014 to 18BA-017, please.
Motion.
Mr. Malloy. Second, please.
Second.
Second, Dr. Foy. Any questions for Mr. McManus this evening? Seeing none, may we have a roll call, please?
Dr. Foy.
Yes.
Mrs. McHugh.
Yes, but I need to abstain to 014.
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Yes, but I need to abstain on the executive session minutes for 18BA014.
Mr. Malloy.
Yes.
Mrs. Vanderoff.
Yes.
Mrs. DeMerle.
Yes.
And Ms. Grant.
Yes.
Motion passed.
Thank you. I'm going to move on to our reports of our committee. I'm going to move over to personnel negotiations. To start, Ms. Vanderoff is the chair of that committee. Ms. Vanderoff, may we have your committee's report, please?
Yes, thank you. The Personnel Negotiations Committee met one time since our last board meeting, and we have 17 action items on tonight's agenda. They're action items 18-PN-123 to action item 18-PN-140. One action item asks for approval for Dr. Feyander's merit goals for this year. The other action items listed on the agenda are fairly routine personnel updates. We unfortunately have one resignation this month. We also have four action items that relate to various leaves of absence. Two items relate to home instruction needed for a couple of our students in the district. Two items relate to new student teacher assignments in the district, and we have three new appointments mentioned in the agenda for this month.
And finally, we have four action items which ask for approval for various stipends for staff members for extracurricular activities. With that, I'd like to ask for a motion for action items 18-PN-123 to action item 18-PN-140.
Looking for a second, please?
Second.
Second, Ms. McHugh. Any questions for Ms. Vanderhoff this evening?
Just I have a question on 18-FF091. So there's not, this isn't a particular company, correct?
FF?
This is just an RFP?
We're doing PN right now, Ms. McHugh.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
The wrong one.
Any questions for personnel?
Just the one. It's a retirement, the resignation, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any other question?
I didn't, if you said that, I'm sorry. The 1/3 PN 137? Co-administrative consultant, I guess consulting. On 1/3 PN 137.
Can you mention that?
Sure.
It's for teacher authorizations. Dr. Pioneer will handle that for you.
I'm happy to. We are very pleased to recommend to you Mr. Mullen to come in and assist us with observations in the district. And the reason that I am requesting this is that we did analysis. Actually, Joanne did this for me, that the observations alone will take over 1,600 hours to conduct and over 1,100 meetings to hold. And this is probably the single most important thing we do in terms of professional growth and being able to give feedback. And we do not have enough administrative hours to do this and do the rest of our jobs. So we're bringing someone in who is just retired as a middle school principal. He is someone with whom I worked before. He loves children, he loves working with teachers. He actually presents on the Danielson model. He's so well skilled in it, and he will be able to help us complete this information that we need to do.
In less than 1,100 meetings, I guess.
Okay. Exactly. He'll be taken over. You should have seen the administrative staff when I said and took to the personnel committee an opportunity to get some help. And we're really excited about it.
And Dr. Fiander, one of the reasons why we would use the help this year versus other years is that we're down a couple administrators that you've just fulfilled right
yes.
now.
Yes, yes. Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions, personnel? Okay, seeing none, may we have a roll call, please?
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Yes.
Mr. Malloy.
Yes.
Mrs. Vanderhoff.
Yes.
Mrs. DeMerley.
Yes.
Dr. Foy.
Yes.
Mrs. McHugh.
Yes.
Ms. Grant.
Yes.
Motion passed.
I'm going to move on to policy and curriculum. Ms. McLaughlin is the chair of that committee. Ms. McLaughlin, may we have the report of your committee, please?
Sure. The policy and curriculum committee met last week. We have five action items tonight. We are approving the nursing services plan for the district. We are approving a contract for some additional Wilson language training. We are approving a date change to a field trip that was previously submitted. We are approving field trips for solar competition, as well as some annual field trips, such as the band and chorus going to Dorney Park in Allentown to compete, and the ski club begins already in January, hard to believe. So with that being said, I have only those five action items tonight to move forward, action 18PC19 through 18PC23.
Looking for a second, please.
I'll second.
Mr. Malloy, any questions for Ms. McLaughlin this evening? Seeing none, may we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Malloy.
Yes.
Mrs. Vanderhoff.
Yes.
Mrs. DeMerley.
Yes.
Dr. Foy.
Yes.
Mrs. McHugh.
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Yes.
Ms. Grant.
Yes.
Motion passed.
Thank you. Unfortunately, Mrs. Olowski, who is the chair of our Facilities and Finance Committee, could not be here this evening. She has sent on to me her report of her committee, and I will present that to you. The Facilities and Finance Committee met once since the October board meeting, and we have 12 action items this month. Slow month for us. Aside from the payment of monthly bills, there are a few things of note. First, there are several staff or Board of Education reimbursement requests related to seminars, conferences, training, and/or graduate courses. Then there are two items related to transportation for the 2017-18 school year. The board will also vote to approve a contract with MobiMax to provide unlimited district licenses for the 2017-18 school year. The board will work to approve this evening the issuance of an RFP for a food service management company for the 18-19 school year with four one-year option renewals. There are also several items related to home instruction, tuition out of district placements, student assessment, student aid, therapy, student courses and or tests, parent training, contractor approvals, and or consultant approval. The board will also vote to approve the district architects of record to provide professional services related to the implementation of projects identified in the long-range facility plan in the amount of $38,750. The board also will vote to approve the attached modification to the long-range facility plan. And with that, I'd like to put forth the motion for action items 18FF-082 through 18FF-093. I'm looking for a second, please.
Second.
Second. Any questions this evening?
Ms. Dr. Finder, maybe. For the proposed additions to the long-range goals, and considering what goal we just put on our list, are these flexible enough that if we have to make decisions about the Spruce Run or any of those schools, that we're not throwing money into a school that we're going to know we're going to make a change to, structurally speaking?
We did have a conversation as a committee as we prioritize what projects and when, starting immediately over the course of the next 2-3 years, pending any decision on what we may or may not do with a school. That long-range facility plan can be changed and updated at any board meeting. So decisions were made on prioritization based on getting a little bit more information and then letting the board decide what we may or may not do.
I guess I was more concerned about that, the ones for 2018 more than the longer ones we probably have are easier to change.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions? I'm seeing none. May we have a roll call, please?
Mrs. Van Roo. Mrs. DeMerling.
Yes.
Dr. Foy.
Yes.
Mrs. McHugh.
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Yes.
Mr. Malloy.
Yes.
Ms. Grant.
Yes.
Motion passed.
Thank you. We have an ad hoc committee called the Feasibility of closing the school, and that committee does not have anything to report this evening. So I'd like to move on to a section of our meeting called All Old Business. Any members of the board have any old business this evening they would like to discuss? Seeing none, I'd like to move on to new business. Any member of the board have any new business they would like to discuss this evening?
I do.
Ms. McLaughlin?
I sit on the Hunterdon County School Boards Association, and almost monthly or few times a year they have dinner meetings with professional development topics. Our next meeting is next week, so you're all invited. You get the email, so it'll be nice if one month one of you might want to join me at the table.
What's the timing?
I believe it is the 30th at 6 o'clock. They rotate the locations. I believe the next one is at the Stanton Ridge Country Club in Reddington. You should be getting monthly invitations from them, and I also think Ed boards them as well.
Any other new business? Okay, seeing none, I'd like to open the floor to second recognition of the public. All the parameters that I had mentioned before apply here as well. If you'd like to address the board, please approach the microphone, state your name and address. We'll be limiting this section to 15 minutes. No, seeing none, Mr. McManus, can we please have you read the executive session statement, sir?
Yes. Whereas while the Senator Byron M. Baer Open Public Meetings Act requires all meetings of the Clinton Township Board of Education to be held in public, NJSA 10-4-12 sets forth 9 types of matters that may lawfully be discussed in executive session without the public being permitted to attend. And whereas the Clinton Township Board of Education has determined that the following issues are permitted by NJSA 10-4-12, Section B, to be discussed without the public in attendance and shall be discussed during an executive session. Whereas any pending or anticipated litigation or contract negotiation in which the public body is or may become a party. Any matters falling within the attorney-client privilege, to the extent that confidentiality is required in order for the attorney to exercise his ethical duties as a lawyer, the nature of the matter described as specifically as possible without undermining the need for confidentiality, is attorney-client privilege, personnel, and negotiations. Whereas the length of the executive session is estimated to be 60 minutes, after which the meeting shall reconvene and proceed with business. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Clinton Township Board of Education will go into executive session for the above stated reasons. Be it further resolved that the board hereby declares that its discussion of the aforementioned subject will be made public at such time as the reason for confidentiality no longer exists.
Thank you, sir. Looking for a motion, please, to go into executive session.
Motion.
Dr. Foy, second.
I'll second.